Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
So Mike LaFleur landed on his feet. He will be the Rams' offensive coordinator. That's so he now works with McVay, with Matthew Stafford, and that offense, whatever's left of that roster as well when they all get back together. And for him, it's probably a chance just to kind of reset, right, Bart? Because he had his first opportunity as an OC with the Jets, and the whole offense was in his hands. And that offense did not do well, and he didn't do a very good job developing a quarterback. But he's a young player, a young coach himself who was still in development stage. So in with the Rams, Bart, he's working with a team that has won a championship, with a head coach that has a tree ascending coaches left and right, and he'll essentially be holding a clipboard and maybe have a chance to just dial it back and learn a lot more about running an offense.
Yeah, I mean, he won't have the pressure of calling the plays because we know who calls the plays right there, even though – you know, Kevin O'Connell was able to become a head coach. It's going to be a little harder. They're looking to kind of tear this team down. They really still don't have any assets. They don't have a first-round draft pick this year, so they're going to have to do a tremendous job from the general manager's standpoint. We know that this general manager can make trades. We don't know how well this general manager drafts because I can't even recall the last draft pick that they've had.
Les Snead is just famous for F them picks. I mean, that's what he's famous
for. Yeah, and literally, I don't recall him making a pick. Listen, anybody out there without Googling, name me the last draft pick that the Rams had. I can't think of it. Like, I can't think of a rookie that they drafted outside of Cam Akers.
Well, didn't they draft, what was it, 36th, right?
Yeah.
That was their draft last year. So they were in the second round at the very least.
Well, they don't have any money. They're looking to start moving some of their players, right? They just paid Bobby Wagner. They can't get rid of him. He became an all-pro this year. But Jalen Ramsey, who, you know, was the $100 million cornerback, has been getting the ball thrown over his head. And he's one of those personalities that can rub you the wrong way. And now they're looking to redistribute some of these funds to be able to go out and get some pieces because they paid everybody. Pay Aaron Donald, number one, which he should, but then you're basically playing two quarterbacks because you're paying Matthew Stafford, then you're paying him, then you're paying Cooper Kupp high money, then you pay Marcus Robinson, and that's what happens when you start just buying, and don't draft and develop. So cautionary tale for the Jets is here as well.
Yeah, none of their picks from last year. Remember they had the one kid was, none of their picks last year played in every game. Darian Kendrick, who was a defensive back, played in 15, and he was a six-round pick. Yeah. So there's not a lot going on there. I guess you could go back to Cam Akers, a second-round pick. That was Van Jefferson. Yeah, that was a pretty good draft.
But the thing,
in 2020.
They're trying to get rid of him. Remember, they were trying to trade him.
I'm just saying, like, as far as like, players that they got that ended up being productive for them, you go back to 2020, those are two pretty good picks, right? Cam Akers for sure.
Yeah, they tried to get rid of Cam Akers. Remember, they tried to trade him midseason.
Yep, that is true. Other news as well, and this is – we saw that Frank Reich was named the head coach of the Carolina Panthers. They're going to introduce him next week, I think Tuesday, officially introduce him. Steve Wilks finished the season as the interim head coach, and we were kind of making jokes that you were about how, it's one thing about opportunity for black coaches is interim is always the opportunity, but getting the head coaching job – not so much. He was frustrated by this. And I don't blame him for it because they finished 6-6 and they were a disaster to start the season, right? They were
rid of their two best players. And Robbie Anderson and McCaffrey.
He went to Twitter and said, "The sun rose this morning, and by the grace of God, so did I. I'm disappointed but not defeated. Many people aren't built for this, and I know what it means to persevere and see it through. It was an honor for me to coach those men in Carolina Panthers locker room. As the interim coach, players, coaches, and staff, thank you for your hard work, dedication. I took pride in representing Charlotte, a great city I love so much. Thank you to my family, friends, and community for the overwhelming support." And he just said, I do wish Frank Reich all the best. I'll always be a fan of the Carolina Panthers football team. But, clearly, some
Frank
frustration.
Frank Reich got fired.
Yeah.
And got a job. This dude, did a good job with what he had, and – we talk about how Friday's the leading candidate for the Indianapolis coach job. He's a guy that was interim coach. If he was able to win, go 6-6 as interim coach, you know, you didn't even give him opportunity to see what he would look like underneath a whole year.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But we'll see what he does. And obviously the quarterback situation there is something to keep an eye on. But it is never going to go away, this conversation with the NFL, when it comes to coaches. It's not. It's never going to go away. Because you could make the argument, Frank Reich was the very first quarterback in the history of that franchise. When they became a franchise, he was the guy. Remember, he was the backup in Buffalo behind Jim Kelly. And, you know, when they became a franchise, they went and got him. And he was their first – so there is history with him in that franchise, but not obviously with the ownership.
Not with
there.
That owner, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but they're looking to do something and make a splash, and this is, I guess, the splash. I don't know. But, you know, for Wilkes, it's a frustration. And again, look at Houston. Last two coaches, minority hires, both of them lasted 1 year. I mean, it's a bad look for the league that they have to deal with.
Meanwhile, Kingsbury gets an extension and goes to one-way ticket to Thailand, and he stunk it up.
That's right.
We didn't even get a chance to stink.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
I would argue David Culley did a good job with that roster. I mean, they were in some very close games.
And that was a rough year. That was a rough year.
And they wanted to hire Josh McCown, who's never coached high school football. It's the only thing he's ever coached.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Like, that's right. He can get a chance.
And only under criticism.
Football.
Right. Right. It was only criticism that stopped them from making that hire. Meanwhile, speaking of the coaching circuit that's going on right now, Wink Martindale, the Giants defensive coordinator, will have a second interview with the Colts.
Well, that's damning.
You think that's damning?
I mean, that'd be tough. You know what I mean? If you lose, like, you know, what the because, like, it's not like he was a guy or this was a staff that had been with Daboll the whole time. Like, they went and got him from Baltimore.
Right.
And so if he leaves, who knows if he takes some of his assistants with him to elevate them. Like,
oh, you mean this is damning for the
defensive staff?
For the Giants.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because you want to build on that. And, no, you can go get another coordinator. He ain't Wink.
No, I agree with that. The job he did with that defense this year.
You hope that he has a Dan Quinn moment where, you know, the Maros and the Tishes come up with a collection plate and give them a little bit more cheese on their taco.
Now, think about this. Jeff Saturday is a guy that was, as a player, beloved, right? Beloved in Indianapolis, yes?
Mm-hmm.
And he took over as the interim coach to finish the season. He went 1-7. I believe it was 1-7. 1-8, maybe? 1-7. Whatever it is. And he has now reached a point that as somebody that is still considered someone that could get the job going forward and has made it clear he wants to coach. Because when he first took it, he's like, I don't know if I want to do this, so I'll find out at the end of the year if this is what I really want to do. And now Jeff is all in. He wants to coach. He wants the job. Do you know that there's a petition going on right now in Indianapolis to keep him from getting the job? There are fans. Seriously. They have started a campaign to basically – like, so he doesn't get the job.
Listen, everybody knows we love us some Jeff.
No, I love Jeff Saturday.
And the pancakes and all the fun we have.
No, that's
here,
our guy.
We have him on our show. Mm-hmm. But that's not right, especially when you had a guy who had head coaching experience and Reggie Wayne, who's equally beloved by Indianapolis, that had won a Super Bowl there, which is a Hall of Famer. He'll get to the Hall of Fame. He's a finalist. Mm-hmm. And he didn't even get an opportunity to even compete or to fill out the application for the head coaching job. They didn't give him a chance. Like, yo, what's it?
Yeah.
And what's easy to see, you can't say, well, one's an offensive player, one's a defensive player. No, they're both offensive players. So you can't say he doesn't have offensive mind. We're looking for an offensive minded coach. The only difference between those two, one is black, one is white. And, you know, I hate to put Jeff in that type of scenario, but
Jeff's not that kind of guy either.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
Jim Irsay's the one that was close to him. He was using him as a consultant during the end of the season.
You have Reggie Wayne right there. Are you saying that Reggie Wayne doesn't have the same football acumen and leadership skills as Jeff Saturday? Because that's what your actions are saying. Because you had a guy that was already on the coaching staff that had been a NFL coach right there, and you look right past him.
Yeah, and brought in Jeff Saturday, who had just been working with us.
He's making pancakes.
We saw him every day in Seaport on the set at Get Up, on the set in our show.
That's the frustration.
And, you know, I mean, I like him enough to not like to see people, you know, having a campaign so he doesn't get the job. I hate that, but I understand it. But it just kind of tells you where Colts fans are right now.
But they're trying to see how qualified is he.
So, okay, and again, 800-919-3776. It's Barton Hahn, Alan Hahn, Bart Scott, 98.7 ESPN. And, you know, the Aaron Rodgers stuff obviously continues as well, the speculation about what can happen there. And the Jets yesterday hiring Nathaniel Hackett to be their offensive coordinator to replace Mike LaFleur already has us all, like, trying to connect the dots and everything else. And whether or not now this means that Aaron Rodgers would come to the Jets in a trade with the Packers, are they ready to move on and get to that point of, okay, it's time for us to reset, go with Jordan Love, and get our assets for Rodgers and get out of that contract, and the Jets would be certainly all in for it.
Can we play a game? Can we play a game with our fans and our
listeners? What's the game?
I think the game should be, does it surprise you, right? Because nobody saw last year's offseason. With Russell Wilson, with the guaranteed contract from Deshaun Watson, with, you know, Kyler Murray, all this, like, does it shock you? Give us some scenarios and some headlines that could be the leading headlines for next season. Because if last year is any indication of what's going to happen in the offseason market, then, listen, we should strap our seatbelts on. Because it could be a wild ride. You think about Lamar Jackson. You think about Jimmy G. Mm-hmm. You think about Aaron Rodgers.
Derek Carr, Tom Brady.
Tom Brady
doesn't sound like he's done, by the way.
No, not at all.
He's barking at everybody that's asking him, what do you want to do? And I think if he was ready to walk away, he would already said it.
You know how we have overreaction Monday? We should have Does It Shock You Fridays.
Let's do this. This is like the reverse Barstradamus. Asking, all right, so what we're asking at 800-919-3776 is, right, you give us a headline that you think could happen for next season, and we'll tell you whether
it's
got to
be shocking. It don't come with no weak sauce.
Yeah. Speaking of sauce, by the way, he was on ESPN Radio on the national network. You know,
playing with Mike White again.
Well, no, but this is more about just obviously, you know, the Aaron Rodgers stuff, and Sauce obviously wouldn't be catching passes from him, but he certainly would be on the other side where the defense would benefit from a better quarterback. So here's Sauce talking about the possibility of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, he's definitely great. He's definitely elite. He's been doing it before I was born. So I can't discredit nothing that he do. You know what I mean? Because I done seen him do so many good things. So no, he's a great quarterback for sure.
Would you want him on your team?
You know, I wouldn't mind that. Sure, I want what's best for the offense. But at the same time, I got to just focus on my job and focus on what we got going on the defensive side.
Bart, how would you feel if you had a player that say, you know, he's been doing it since before I was born?
I'd end the interview. That's the make a deal out of it. Like, yo, who am I, Moses? It's like, he's been doing it since before I was born. Damn, hold up. That's got to be impossible. Aaron Rodgers is in his 18th year.
Right. Sauce was born in 2000.
Stop.
So, but it's still funny. It's still funny. He's trying to be respectful. Like, no, man, he's been
shame.
Doing it so long.
He's trying to be respectful. He's disrespectful at the same time.
Bringing up age.
Man, he played with Joe Namath. Like, hold up, dog. Played with Theismann and them, right? Like, man, hold up, man. Hey, Brett, are you talking about Brett Favre?
Right. Oh, I thought it was the same dude. Oh,
they ain't the same dude that they got traded from Atlanta? Like, man, look, dude.
We got Chris.
Get your punky Brewster ass.
Chris in Huntington. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Calling in, big Jets fan. Bart was a great fan of your work in 2010. You know, that was that made me become a Jets fan. So just wanted to give you a quick shout out right there.
Chris, tell him. Bart, you've been doing it before I was born. I mean, really, you know, just been a big fan since an embryo.
Chris, you're going to hear a dial tone.
Nah, but I love the stuff. I love the stuff. But anyway, I'll get to my point now. Uh-huh. So, obviously, yesterday, Jets hired Hackett. I'm ecstatic. All Jets fans, you know, the connections between getting Rodgers. But now the day after, the dust has settled a little bit. Now I'm thinking to myself, you know, the Jets have always wanted to go get the big guy. You know, last year they didn't get Tyreek Hill. You know, years back they went after, obviously not on the on the same level as getting Kirk Cousins. But that was another failure to get the quarterback position. So I'm thinking to myself today, you know, what makes this time different? Like, why should I believe that they're going to get it right now and get the guy they want when so many times in years past they haven't been able to?
Yeah, it's fair.
It's they're ascending because of the ascension, right? Because if you look, everybody in the world knows that the Jets are headed in the right direction, and they see the talent. They see what they have. They have opportunity to go out and, you know, they weren't healthy, but yet they were still highly competitive. They were right there with all those injuries. And even with those injuries, if you add a guy like Aaron Rodgers to the mix, he knows it and I know it that, you know, he's going to be able to win more games than lose. And for Aaron Rodgers, he's like, hey, I don't even have to do as much. I got better receivers here than I had last year. And if you want to get some truth serum, a healthy Breece Hall is better than an A.J. Dillon and better than Aaron Jones.
Who? So, the Jets?
You know, now you can say, okay, I would ask if I'm Aaron Rodgers, what are we going to do about this offensive line?
Mm-hmm.
And Mercedes Lewis and all those guys that he likes to block and those other tight ends, they can go out and make a competitive bid. And if you're talking about giving them 2024 pick instead of 2023 and you still get to I'll do that. I'll kick that can down the road.
Much different than now. I can actually use the 13 pick and get it, whether it's another wide receiver or a tackle. Yeah, absolutely. But of course, the reality, and I hate being the reality guy on this, but I'm gonna. The reality is, of course, the Packers have to want to do this. It starts with the Packers.
Well, Aaron Rodgers got to want to have a desire to move on too. Like, you know what, y'all.
But he already said he's fine with it. He's already made it clear that if they want to move on, I'm fine with that.
But what is he telling them? But he's telling them if you're going to move on, then if you're not going to bring in Tonyan, you're not going to sign Mercedes Lewis, you're not going to sign Bakhtiari, who's
So what should they do? What should the Packers do right now when you look at that division and you see where they are? They used to dominate that division. Now you could see that objects in the mirror are closer than they appear. Right, the Lions. You could see that that's going to be a tough team. The Vikings were a very good team this year.
And they'll get better.
Who knows what the Bears are going to be? But is this time for the Packers to hit the reset button? That's the question. Are they willing to do it?
I think they have. I mean, I think it's the smart way. You got to give Jordan Love 2 years to see what he can do. You can't say, okay, well, you know, either show me this year, you ain't never played before, and get out of here. They still have to sign Rashawn Gary, who's coming off an injury, to a major contract. They got to sign him to $15, $20 million a year.
Yeah.
He's their best pass rush. He's their first-round draft pick. It's time for those credit card bills to be paid.
Yeah, that's
so the
that's
best way
the
to
thing.
Do it is to dump Aaron Rodgers so you can do that and be young and have a plan and say, hey, we're going to take a step back, much like the Pittsburgh Steelers did for 1 year, hopefully, and we'll be able to hit the ground running going forward.
I got to be honest with you, as much as there's so much enthusiasm behind this, it seems like almost everyone is like, yeah, the Jets have to do this. They have to be all in. I just cannot help but have this lingering feeling of I won't believe it until it's done. I just won't.
It wasn't a lot of speculation when the Jets traded for Brett Favre. So
Brett Favre, that happened really late. Remember, that happened in the summer. It happened late, and it was always like Brett Favre, is he going to play? Is he retiring? What is he doing? Such a dramatic thing. Yes, it does. It does.
Super familiar.
But they had Aaron Rodgers waiting. They knew it was time. But they don't know what they've got in Jordan Love. They knew what they had in Aaron Rodgers because he just showed you that year before when he got a couple games in. He showed you there's something there. Jordan Love hasn't shown you anything.
Yeah, he did. When he played against Philadelphia, he looked damn good.
He looked good. All right.
And the thing is,
just
like,
keep feeding me all this optimism. I need it.
You're giving LaFleur power, too. You know what I mean? Because Aaron Rodgers is the guy that's the biggest voice there. Start over with him, then you give your young, successful coach an opportunity to mold young receivers with a young quarterback to run the offense the way that he sees fit, not the way that Aaron Rodgers, who he has to tell the why to all the time, instead of just telling him the what, he's going to be able to do that with Jordan Love.
Okay, I like it.
And if not, then you're just going to have Jordan Love come in, you gave up assets for him, and come in and never play and walk out the door.
Right, and that's obviously the next place they're in. So they have to – they are getting – remember I told you there's the deadline to everything when it comes to front office. There's always a deadline. And that one is the one that's coming faster for the Packers now, is that deadline of you got to know on Jordan Love pretty soon. And the only way to know is if he gets a full season without somebody hovering over his head. All right, so we'll get more into Championship Sunday and the matchups between the Niners and the Eagles, the Bengals and the Chiefs, the latest on the injuries, and, of course, what Vegas is saying about both of these games.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
Championship Sunday. We've got your matchups. 49ers and the Eagles at 3 p.m. Bengals and the Chiefs are the 6:30 game. Looks like Patrick Mahomes' ankle is going to be okay, but everybody's watching. Everybody's talking about it. I think Diana Rossini is covering the game. I think she said today on Get Up that she's going to be watching tape to see how much tape they had on it last week versus how much tape is on it this week. That's how detailed we get about this stuff, because it does matter, and everybody's watching this stuff. That's, of course, why the line keeps changing. That's why, you know, it went from, it was 2.5 one way, 2.5 the other way, all over the map. So we shall see. But the one thing we know, the part, is that you feel, you're the only one on the panel that believes the Niners will win this game in Philly on Sunday. What makes you so positive about the Niners winning, which will be a tough road game? 3 o'clock, West Coast to East Coast. Weather's going to be really cold. In fact, I believe there might be a little bit of flurries Sunday afternoon in Philly.
But it's it's cold in San Fran too.
But I'm just saying it's all the things that you would think are working against the Niners in this, which is the travel, the weather, all the other things. What makes you so confident in Brock Purdy and the Niners?
I don't know if I'm confident in Brock Purdy. I think I'm more confident in Kyle Shanahan and being able to devise an offensive game plan that will keep the defense on the field. And, you know, they're equally matched. And on paper, I just think that, you know, Jalen Hurts gives Philadelphia Eagles the advantage until you consider Kyle Shanahan and his ability to put a good enough game plan. See, but people always think that the best team wins. The best team doesn't always win. The best strategy wins. And I feel like they understand who they are. And I feel like even though Philadelphia is not a soft team, I just feel like the most physical team in football is the San Francisco 49ers. And I think when you talk about, you know, they didn't win the division, so they've played one more game. But I think the physicality will eventually catch up with them. And I look at a guy like Deebo Samuels, who, you know, on the other side you see big play Slay. But I've seen Deebo Samuels take a talented corner and destroy him just by being able to break his tackles in Jalen Ramsey. I see him do that routinely. So, like, when somebody comes after your strength, and I'm also curious to see how Armstead handles Jason Kelce, because that's the real head of the snake. That's the most important person on the offensive side of the ball is Kelce. He does all the checks. He's the guy that's sneaking out and pulling and getting in front of Jalen in front of some of these quarterback runs. I just think that they'll be able to exploit that run defense. That run defense hasn't been tested because they've been the better opponent on both sides, so the offense hasn't had to do that. The defense hasn't had to play that type of game because that, you know, they've been able to get ahead. And I just think that they're going to have to play defense for four quarters. And I think when you look at the weakness of the San Francisco 49ers is their secondary, but the weakness of the Philadelphia Eagles are their linebackers. And if I'm going to do that, I'm going to do what I did or what Bill Parcells did against the Buffalo Bills. I'm just going to keep that offense on the sideline. Mm-hmm. That way the pressure mounts up on a guy like Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith to score when they get the ball, because they feel like, man, we only had the ball once in the first quarter or second and twice in the first quarter. You saw that Dallas game, right? That Dallas game, it was only like three possessions in the first quarter, and it was over.
It's amazing, right? Yeah, it was amazing how that game was. Felt like a grinder from the very start. Now, again, just an update. The weather actually on Sunday has changed. It's going to be low 50s in the middle afternoon.
That's beautiful.
But it will be partly cloudy. But yeah, low 50s is everything you want. Like, slight chance precipitation, but not really that much.
Robbie Gould, remember, is one of the best bad weather or big time kickers in the league.
That's always going to be important in these games. Absolutely. Now, you mentioned the running game. You mentioned what they can do, the Niners, offensively. Christian McCaffrey hasn't practiced this week. He missed a couple of practices with a calf injury. But when asked if there's any chance he won't play.
Christian, is there any chance in your mind that you won't play on Sunday?
Zero.
Zero chance that he won't play. So you have that on that side.
Elijah Moore is a one. It's not like they have two ones at the running back position. And plus Deebo Samuel. They got plenty of capable, healthy running backs. McCaffrey's only going to have to run the ball like 15 times, and he's probably going to get 20 touches.
Now, on the other side on the AFC side of this, you've got, I think, what is starting to become a rivalry.
Oh, yeah.
Because not only is it on the field, and you know the Bengals kind of feel like, you know, we own you. But there's an animosity growing on the other side of it because the Chiefs have been sort of the dominant team in the AFC of late with the best quarterback, and yet they keep getting this pushback from this newcomer showing up and trying to push them around. Listen to what Willie Gay had to say about the Bengals' offense that everybody is so obviously impressed with.
Like Coach Reed said, we don't do no talking. We just go handle business when it's time to go.
What is it about that Bengals offense that maybe impresses you the most? You played it a few times?
Nothing.
Okay.
I thought Coach Reed said we're not to say anything.
Right. Oh yeah, nothing. That's why I kept it short. Like, come on, man. Like that's the thing though. That's how you know they're getting under their skin. See, they're getting out of their skin because they beat them three times in a row and they're talking trash about it. Yep. They're calling it Burrowhead. Yeah. Right. So like nobody. That's like how people look at Memphis, right? Nobody, even though Memphis didn't win, nobody calls out the Golden State Warriors. Nobody calls out the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, it's supposed to be a level of respect there, newcomers.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at it.
Well, they beat them twice. Why should they have respect?
Twice, three times.
Well,
and
that's true.
And we beat them when you wanted the most. This ain't like we just won some meaningless game in a regular season where it wasn't that important. No, we beat you to go to the Super Bowl.
Right, biggest game.
And it's the thing. Like, we thought this. You know how you'd be like, man, that's not your line? Like, this was supposed to be. That's not supposed to be their line. This is supposed to be the Buffalo Bills line. The Buffalo Bills was in line.
Yeah.
And it's like, sorry, dog. I got a fast pass. Get behind me. Like, whoa. Yep. No, we've been waiting here for a long time, sir.
Right.
Sorry, fast pass. Yeah, I got an appointed time. Thank you, sir. And it's like, man, these dudes just come on the block and they haven't had an answer for it. So, I mean, you talk about that's what makes it a rivalry when you're a good team and you're like, man, we can't beat this team. Not only that rivalry for them, they're rival for the Bills because the Bills are like, we can't beat this team.
Well, that's their other problem, right? That, like you said, they skipped over them. So that there's something brewing there. But, boy, I'll tell you what, if Burrow and company go in there and win again, what you said yesterday on Get Up, I mean, it's true. It's almost as if at that point, Mahomes and company have to hand the crown over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what could you possibly say to defend the Chiefs at this point?
AFC,
if they lose this, how much pressure? There's so much pressure on Mahomes and company to win this game. Have to. There's no pressure at all on the Bengals. The only pressure they have is their own want-to pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're the Chiefs and you lose this game, and don't give me that, well, Mahomes was injured. Don't give me that. Everybody's injured right now.
Yeah, like that, Burrow doesn't
so
have three
compelling.
Of his starting offensive linemen. Nobody want to hear that, bro.
Like that's what makes this game so damn compelling. You know, like the Eagles-Niners game has its own drama because of the Hurts stuff.
Yeah, but this is new.
This is different, though. This is literally when the game's over that you have to hand over the crown.
Yeah.
Right? It's yours now.
You got the juice now.
You know what I mean? Like are you not – am I overstating this, Bart?
You're not. And you have to say, hey, man, Joe Burrow is like, he's the guy. Like, he's the number one.
He's him.
He's the number one.
Which is what he said.
Yeah, he's the number one quarterback in the AFC. You have to give him that. Now, other guys can come back. And like I said, that's always least not own, right? We've seen a league that was dominated by Tom Brady. We've seen one that at the same time was occupied by Ben Roethlisberger.
Sure.
We've seen one that was occupied by Eli Manning for a minute. But consistently, it's been Tom Brady's and maybe Aaron Rodgers' league, even though he doesn't win. Like, it's talking about who do you have more confidence in as a quarterback? If you're one drive, who do you believe in more? If Joe Burrow wins, and he wins, it don't have to be decisive, then you have to give that crown to Joe Burrow. Like, man, if you ain't never beat me, how the hell y'all gonna say he better than me? He ain't never beat me.
And that's the part I think that you have Burrow would have, and all of his, of course, supporters would have the argument. Let's go to Rob in Winfield on all this. Rob?
Hey, what's up, guys? Big Bengal fan. I called you before. I got, like, two things to say. Like, everyone's talking about the Burrow and Mahomes, but you just brought it up, Bart, too, is I think it's the offensive line and how these defenses are playing, because they're both playing well, but they're just overshadowed by the offenses that they have.
Well, let's state the obvious, Rob. The weakest unit in all these teams are the Kansas City defense. They don't have great pass rushers. They have a great, you know, outside of Quentin Williams and maybe Aaron Donald, Chris Jones is the most dominant presence in the inside. He's amazing, but they don't get to the passer particularly well. So I don't know if they can exploit this this offensive line who came off and fired off the ball and bullied the Buffalo last Buffalo. Week.
Yeah, that was something.
Bullied them, threw them out the club with three backups. Like, they don't have no war daddies over there. Like, they don't have no great Kalafis. Like, he's a good young rookie, young player, but he ain't that dude like that. And those corners on the outside, you got to say the advantage goes Hayden Hurst, Chase. So the weakest unit is the defense of the Kansas City Chiefs, because the defense of the Bengals have a way of slowing Mahomes down, but also stopping and it's really slowing Travis Kelce down.
So, all right, so the update on the injuries for the offensive line. So we already know that Alex Kapp is not going to play. Jonah Williams will not play as well. But Ted Karras has practiced, and it seems like he will be back. So three offensive linemen, key ones, that missed a divisional game in Buffalo, at least one will be back. So it does give them a little bit of, you know, it does solidify a little bit more that offensive line going into this game. That's the good news. But still, you know, in the end, like you said, it's a matter of which defense will be able to, I don't know about get at the quarterback, but you know what I mean, put the pressure on. But, and you have more
turnovers,
faith in what the Bengals can do. You think this is going to be a big turnover
better
game?
Unit. They have the better front four. They have two of the best safeties in the game in Von Bell and Jesse Bates.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know they got Eli Apple, but they cover him up okay, and he makes plays.
By the way, why
sometimes.
Is he chirping? Talk about chirping. Yeah. What is
he always chirping? People say that he's the Patrick Beverly of football. Yeah, he a little fire star. Remember, he gets in Twitter beefs and talks stuff, and remember talking about have fun in Cabo?
Yeah,
right?
Remember
they sent him back in Cabo when they lost in the Super Bowl to the Rams?
Mm-hmm.
They told him go to Cabo?
Yeah.
Because he was talking stuff to other people about going to Cabo?
I know.
He did win. He did help them beat the Titans.
So one key stat when you brought up the turnover thing, because I was curious about this too. Like, is turnovers a big story in this? It absolutely is. Here's why. So the Bengals have won the turnover battle in all six playoff games that they've had with Joe Burrow. The six-game winning streak on the turnover battle in the playoffs is the second longest in NFL history. And Bart, if they win the turnover battle against the Chiefs, it will tie the Washington, the old Redskins from back in 86 to 90, with the most ever in football history. Seven straight games winning the turnover battle. So that just shows you how important this turnover battle actually is for the Bengals. It does lead to their success.
Anytime I get a ball back to Joe Burrow in that offense.
That's a good point.
And if it's on a short field, that's usually instant points. And they got a lockdown kicker too. Both teams feature two very, very good kickers.
All right. So that's the story for Sunday, Championship Sunday. In the 2 o'clock hour, we'll give you our picks when we do lunch money, and we'll give you the latest lines from Vegas on both of these games. We got your calls at 800-919-3776. And I mentioned it earlier, the Nets lost last night to Bart's Pistons in the back-to-back game. That it's still
in the running for Weiwei. Did it take us out of the running for Weiwei?
Weiwei is very much in the crosshairs. No worries about that.
Okay.
But Jacques Vaughn, the coach of the Nets, after the game, sounded like he was running out of patience with Ben Simmons, who did play in the game, but just for a little bit.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
Before we get to Jacques Vaughn, because This is something that you talked about. I'm trying to remember when we did this, but when Tua Tagovailoa was going through the concussion issues, and we were talking about him as a player and all the different stuff, and you kept saying something about how his family was so invested in him. The whole family moved to Alabama when he played there,
yep.
Right? So he's had, well, they're saying two concussions. And where was this? I'm trying to see where this came from originally, but I guess his parents were interviewed. And I don't exactly know where, so I apologize. But the question was basically, is there any doubt that Tua comes back and plays next year? Because there is some, like you were bringing up too, there's some speculation about concern about his future now with two concussions, and he's still in the protocol. He's not going to play. He's not going to participate in the Pro Bowl.
And that's no contact. They don't even put pads on.
Exactly. That's true too. They're playing flag football, and he's not cleared for that.
And playing beer cornhole.
So the response that his parents gave was, no, he comes back. That's their guy. They love him. We love them and what they're doing and how they are helping with his recovery and trying to get him back. As parents, man. I wouldn't want to even talk about it. After seeing what he looked like on that field.
Three times.
I don't want to be hypercritical of his parents because, I mean, again, it's all.
Listen, I had parents from Hawaii, friends from Hawaii, that was everybody's key to get out, even so much more than what we always consider that in the African-American community. It was totally different there when you talk about coming from island. I can remember my teammate, they basically forced him and guilted him into giving up his truck, and he didn't drive for a while because they we need a truck. And they took he had a GMC Yukon, Denali. Took it. And, it's different cultures feel like they have different responsibilities. I've had Albanian teammates who it's custom for you to take care of the grandparents, and the grandparents live with you in the house and stuff. So I can't understand it. I just felt the pressure that they were under and how immense it was. And, they look at it as the opportunity to come to the main island, so to speak. And, when they move from there to Alabama, because why else would parents come to Alabama?
Well, they were going to be there with them, but the whole family went there.
Right, because it becomes a family
business. It's just what they do. It's just what they do. And that's fine.
Not all.
But I'll tell you what. No, I'm saying it's what they as a family. I meant the Tagovailoa. So that's what they do.
Yep.
But that just that kind of, response – I don't know. For me, I don't know if that's the right time.
It hits you different as a parent. It hits you different as a parent. Yeah. It's hold up, maybe this is the case.
If they say is he definitely going to play this year? I don't know what's going to happen.
We watched with Bernie Kosar when he talked about his dad had a side deal with the Cleveland Browns and he got $1 million and all that type of stuff. It happens. And listen, we're not accusing anybody of anything, but what I'm saying is I see signs that he's the family business. And this is the time to collect on all the hard work. And it's tough to walk away. And even if he puts himself at risk, the issue is not the parents or Tua Tagovailoa. The issue is, will Miami invest in him long term, knowing what everything that he has to go through just to get back? And we're only talking about him in his, third year? Only first year full-time as a full-time starter?
And, man, did he just get smacked around. That, as I said, that's the part that really, as a parent.
I mean, even –
How are you not just thinking to yourself,
Yeah, so
I don't want to even talk about it.
Yeah,
right?
So even if he decided to say, even if they don't give it, I go play, I'm going to take a big insurance policy out on myself, and if I have to retire because I can't continue, I can cash that in. I don't even know if Lords of London or somebody will even insure him knowing what his history is now. So it may be too late for that.
All right, so the other story I wanted to get to here involves the Nets last night. So the Nets lose to the Pistons.
Don't say that so light. You said it in disgust. The Pistons.
And they
had some new uniforms on, too.
They did. So they lost in Brooklyn, 130-122. Just a brutal game for them in the second half. But Sadiq Bey had a big game. But this is not the story. Kyrie Irving went for 40. I mean, he did everything he could. It's a back-to-back, as we know, and that was an emotional, physical game against the Sixers the night before that they lost that as well. But the story involves Ben Simmons, who in Philly showed signs of life in the second half, played 29 minutes, had 12 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, didn't play down to the stretch in the fourth quarter, but still showed signs of life. So now the very next night, he's in the lineup again, plays 20 minutes, Barty took three shots, didn't make a shot. He had one rebound. He did have seven assists.
One rebound.
But then he left the game with knee soreness or something. Wasn't available for his team in the second half. Jacques Vaughn's asked about the situation with Ben Simmons and about the sore knee and what the issue is. And listen to how he responds to it.
There's no excuses. You know, we all play the same amount of games throughout the course of the year, and the schedule dictates its own self for each team. We gave effort in Philadelphia yesterday, and the expectations, what we always talk about, was to win this basketball game. So the people who suited up, the people who played, the people who stepped on the floor had an opportunity to impact the basketball game for their teammates. And that's the objective every single time we step on the floor. We were expected to win tonight.
What do you hear there? Because that sounds to me like a coach who's running out of patience with a player that they desperately need to start bringing it on a regular basis.
And to be aggressive and have some confidence, man. Come out of whatever funk he is, whatever got him there. Like, listen, man, like, look at all what you did to get here. Like, and you're a shell of yourself. You're gonna let one moment define your career? And it's hard to develop because, you know, you talk about a team in the Nets that we feel, hey, man, when KD and Kyrie is there,
yep,
man, like, if you go out and make a move, like, you should be trying to do something. Like, they can beat anybody.
I think they're looking
at – they need Bill Simmons, aggressive Ben Simmons, and consistent Ben Simmons.
They also, to me, I think they're looking at him, and I think the big question is, we know you can play. We just don't know if you want to.
Right, liability.
And that –
to find a way to get paid and get his money and go back to Australia.
That's a major concern.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.